I'm Matthew McCabe. Welcome to Miracle Voices. Each episode, we will be delving into stories of forgiveness, healing, and transformation that have come about from integrating the principles of the book, A Course in Miracles. If you want to learn more about A Course in Miracles, visit www.acim.org. If you'd like to visit the Miracle Voices site, please go to www.miraclevoices.org. If you feel inspired to make a love offering, please visit us at miraclevoices.org/donate. All donations go to support the work of the Foundation for Inner Peace, the publisher of A Course in Miracles. Now here's your program. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of Miracle Voices. This is your co-host, Matt McCabe, here with my co-host, Tam Morgan. Tam, how are you doing today?
Doing well today, sitting in the fog. Metaphorically, physically, whatever you want.
And literally, too, is it foggy there in the Bay Area?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I forgot to say that. Literally. Yes.
Okay. Okay. And welcome to our guest, Stefan Boltz. Stefan, welcome to Miracle Voices.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Stefan, where are you sitting in the world right now?
I'm in upstate New York, Hudson Valley, which is about 70 miles from Manhattan north, just along the river. We're about 10 minutes from the Hudson River.
Okay.
Wait, and just because you have a little hint of an accent, where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Germany.
Ah, thank you.
Oh, this will be great when we come to comfort food time. So I'm glad you mentioned
that. Oh, yeah.
Okay. And well, Stefan, why don't we start with how A Course in Miracles came into your life? Can you tell us how that happened?
Yes. So I think I was in my mid-20s. I had started to read esoteric literature. I had a really nice life. I was 22. I had a baby on the way. I had a good job. I was in the army. And I drove home on a Friday afternoon and some traffic jam, and it kind of hit me. This voice inside me said, this is it now. You know, is this all there is to life? And so I'm going to be, you know, we're going to have a baby, and then we're going to go to my wife's parents for coffee on Fridays. And it's just, it just hit me that there must be more to life. And the next day somebody gave me a book about the unconscious mind. And I started reading all the esoteric and new age books that I could possibly read. And then amidst that, maybe a year or so later, I ordered a book about psychology of love in my local bookstore, and the wrong book came. And the book was called The Heart of Healing by Jenny Wright Davis and Bruce Davis. And they talked about, did you know it, Pam?
Yes.
Yeah.
I know it.
Right. Yeah. So they talked about their journey with spiritual journey and how they met and all this stuff. And then it came to the first quote, which is the one where it says, you cannot understand how much your father loves you, because there is no similarity in this world. I don't know the exact quote. And I just started crying when I read it. So I just finished the book, and there were so many quotes in it. And then I started, there was no course in German. The translation wasn't done. So I was trying to read everything I could. You know, Jerry Jampolsky was the big one. And then later on, Marianne Williamson. And I sent cookies to the publisher in Germany, to the translators, and said, hurry up, I want the course. Because I got the English version and it just didn't mean anything. You know, I tried to translate it and I was like, you know what? I have no clue what this means, but I know this is my path. That was all I could kind of say and do with it, because I really didn't understand anything. I tried to translate the miracle principles and like, what is this? You know, I had no clue, but I knew this was it. So I gave away all my other books, and I wrote a letter to the publisher with cookies in it, in a package.
That to Heinz? Was that to Heinz?
This was Greuthof.
Right.
Greuthof Verlag, yeah, in Germany. And for some reason, I ended up on their mailing list, and in January 93, I got a letter that says there's a Course in Miracles workshop in Turkey by the translator. And I was the first one to sign up. And then 2 years later, I went to Roscoe to study with at the foundation for 3 months. Oh, and that was kind of the beginning. That was the beginning of it. Yeah.
That's great. Well, what was it like at Foundation for A Course in Miracles, Ken Wapnick and Gloria Wapnick's study retreat center? How was that?
So, you know, all the things I thought it would be completely were blown out of the water the first 2 days. First of all, there was fog also. There was fog on the lake the first 2 days, and I didn't see anything. I didn't see outside my window. I was there, and I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to be there for 3 months, and why did I choose to be here for 3 months? It was a ridiculous thought, right? I met a bunch of people, but it was all very quiet, and Ken wasn't there, and there was no workshops yet. But then the fog cleared, and it was really beautiful. But in short, it was a life-changing experience, because it wasn't anything. It wasn't really a spiritual place. I'm not sure if I say that correctly, but
yeah,
there was no bling. You know, there was no kind of additional stuff. It was basically a campus. You did your own study. You go to the classes. You did your own study. Maybe you go out with some of the course students, but it's the focus is on self-study with the course. And once in a while, you know, Ken would have a list of times and days where he was available. So I put myself in there a couple of times, and it was truly that if you were talking to him, or I was talking to him, for like 1 minute, his slots were like 2 minutes long, right? It wasn't like a long conversation. It was 2 minutes long. And I left those encounters, and I felt a waves of love just, you know, crashing over me. It was just a very intense on that side, the plus side, but also it just brought up so much stuff. I was basically reading in the course about 5 hours a day. And that takes its toll. You know, after the first month, there was a lot of stuff that's coming up for me there. A lot of good experiences, but also a lot of guilt that I kind of looked at, and some situations when I was little, when my parents got divorced, and with Jesus, and it was a very intense, very intense time.
Oh, wow. Well, that's great. That's great. You had the opportunity to do that for 3 months. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Wait, and what year was this?
That was 96.
96.
Mm. Yeah. And that was just, they just started a year before to have up to 1 year long stays. You could be there up to a year. And you would be in the little motel, and you know, you do your own thing, but you go to the academies and the classes and all that stuff, and you talk to Ken once in a while. But there was they just did it, and I think a year later they stopped it. So I just snuck into that window of like, oh, I can be there for 3 months, and then while I was there, I thought, oh my God, I have to be here for 3 months. You know, it was definitely both sides of the spectrum.
So you saw a lot of classes taking place and people coming in, coming and going. When you look back on it, do you see any themes of what people struggled with and maybe perhaps had breakthroughs, or were able to get past?
I mean, I really don't know. I'm not sure. I was so in my own process that, I mean, I had a lot of contact with people, but it was also, you know, it was the third year of my course that I knew the course. So it was all very new and very intense for me. So I didn't really have any kind of
sense of your surroundings or what was going on. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, no. And you sit on this incredible, beautiful lake, you know, and I felt sometimes devastated, you know, because of the material, all that stuff it brought up. So it was very interesting, for sure.
I love that you said that reading the course 5 hours a day took its toll.
Yeah, it did.
Great. your description that it wasn't a spiritual place. So it sounds like your perception of it was that it was more an academic.
So basically what I think it was, you know, and Gloria said that they had groups every week with this one staff member. So we attended that. And sometimes Gloria, you know, was there. And she said, we don't boost anybody's ego here. And I realized that is exactly what that was. There was no fluff. It was a very stark situation because everything else would have been a distraction, I think, for the study. You know, it was very clear. It was very clean. There were very little distractions. There was one room that had a little TV in it. And once in a while, we would watch a movie. And there was a library with Ken's library and such. But it was very just you and Jesus, you know. There was not a lot of distractions. I mean, you could take a boat out on the lake and stuff. And in the summer, we did that once in a while. But it was really focused on your own process, you know. There was not much other stuff going on. There was no hand, you know, circles with hand holding and chanting and all this stuff. There was none of it, you know.
Yes, it was basically, you know, in a way, the difference between a David Hofmeister group where they watch movies for the course, you know,
right.
And have all the music and all sorts of stuff versus Ken, who had been a monk.
Right, exactly. And you could feel it. You could
dark
feel
and
it.
Monk and very crisp and clean and nothing else. Just
Spartan. Yeah.
And we were happy, you know, we were happy to have like we would watch a movie like, oh my God, movie night. And we would look forward to it because like, oh, I have to get away from that, from all this material to do something in the world.
Yes.
Well, Stefan, we'd love to hear a forgiveness story if you'd like to share one.
So basically, I mean, everything really that this was the focus there. And so when I just have to go back a couple of years to connect it to the time in Roscoe, because that's where that happened. In my 20s, I was in a lot of pain, and it started out as almost like a toothache that was barely noticeable, and it increased and increased. And then I met the course, and I also at the same time walked over this flea market in Germany, and I saw this massive, very cheesy painting of Jesus on a hill praying to, you know, the moon was there, clouds. It was very cheesy painting. But I had to buy it. So I bought it for like 5 Deutschmarks. I put it in my room. It was huge. I'm like, why did I do this? But as I went through this one phase where I was in a lot of pain, I found myself below it. You know, I was kneeling below it. I was lying in a fetal position below it. I said, please, you know, take this pain away in the initial stages. So initially Jesus was kind of my, almost like my dumping ground for, I'm not feeling well, and I'm giving you everything that I'm, you know, like, I didn't take responsibility for what I felt. I was just like, I feel bad, this, you know, take this from me and all this stuff. And then this started to change into a more grown-up relationship where I would start telling him things. I would have a diary, and then during close to the foundation stay, I would write letters to him in my diary. And I would say, "Dear Jesus," and then I would write down what was going on in my head and stuff like that. So, and that I intensified during the stay until one morning I woke up kind of in a, you know, when you just woke up, when you just wake up, it's kind of still a little foggy in your mind. And I felt this anger, almost like a rageful feeling. And I never have that, you know, I'm not really angry. So I wanted to kind of stop it. And then, you know, being a quote unquote good course student, like, oh no, anger and stuff. So I said, you know what, let's just see where this goes. So I had this image in my head where I would exit the door of my room, and it was like a motel with a long balcony, you know, connecting about maybe 12 rooms. And I was going out on the balcony, and there were people on the balcony, and I don't know what came over me, but in my mind, I was throwing them over the railing. I was beating them up. I was pushing them back in the room, and I went from one door to the other, and people would come out, and I would go crazy and push them away and push them away and move to the other end of the balcony. And then I saw Jesus standing at the end, and he was dressed 100% like you would expect him, right? A little robe with a little, you know, sandals and whatever, very Jesus-like that we knew from Christianity. And I had all of a sudden a sword in my hand. And I hesitated for 1 second, and then I said, you know what, I didn't really say anything. And the first thing I did was I cut off his head with the sword. I cut off his head, I cut off his arms, I stabbed him a couple of times, and as he collapsed, I kind of rammed the sword into the porch, and it had like a wood floor, and I was so mad. I rammed the sword into the ground, and I could see it swinging back and forth in the, you know, from the force. And then suddenly roots grew out of the sword at the bottom, and they kind of mingled into the ground. And then the sword changed into a lily, and it had the whitest blossoms. And I turned around, and then he stood there. And he said, "You can't kill me." And then I started to cry in my bed when I was sitting lying in bed, imagining this. And we hugged. And it didn't register yet what that meant. You know, it took a couple of days to process it and to realize, and this basically changed my whole trajectory of my life. I went back to the US, you know, 5 months later, and that's why I came here. But at that moment, it was just the profound knowledge that, you know, even though we try to kill him every day, when we go to the ego, we try to deny him and you know, destroy love all over, it won't work. And so that was the first part of that experience. I can tell you the second part also. It happened like a couple of weeks later.
Sure.
So the second part was I met my now ex-wife there, and she was also a student. And we were, I don't know, I think we were in her, she had a tiny little apartment, and she was there, and she was studying. She went to the academies and stuff like that. So we were in her apartment, and we were talking about the course somehow. And suddenly I felt this incredible love that kind of washed over me. And I knew it wasn't connected to her at all. It was, I think the only word I can say is it was vast. It was this vast unending love that was so huge, I was completely unable to manage it. And the only thing I could say at that moment, I was kind of telling Laura at that moment, I said, if we were to completely trust Jesus 100%, we would never have to worry about anything at all, at all. I mean, there would be zero worry. And I knew it was true at that very moment. And this lasted about, 20 seconds. And then it stopped and we went on with our day. And, you know, it just continued on. The visit eventually ended. But this was, I think it was the second part of that experience, but it was good at that moment. But what it also did was the contrast from that point on was so staggering a lot of times that I'm still, you know, this has been the process since then, 25 years ago, or more than 25 years ago, that contrast of what the ego is and what it actually is that the Course leads us to in the end. It's such a profound contrast that the whitewashing and the sugarcoating is nearly impossible now. You know, it just doesn't, denial just doesn't work anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that was it.
When first part of your story with the sword and Jesus and so forth and the sandals, what did you take the symbolism to mean there as you digested that over the years?
So for me, I'm into fantasy and Lord of the Rings and stuff like that. So for me, my method of killing him was basically the Lord of the Rings method, you know, Aragorn with a sword. But it also, the lily was obviously the sign of forgiveness, you know, in the Course that comes up a couple of times in the Easter sections. But basically my takeaway now is that that would be the foundation of the Course. You know, in the introduction, it says nothing real can be threatened. Love cannot be destroyed. And that will be, or that is for me, the foundation of the work with the Course, to always bring it back to that love does not change. And looking at our guilt is the other 50% of the Course, that we really have to look at that, at the block, and bring that block and look at that block with the love there. And that will be the work. So that was for me, that cemented that. And that became the foundation for my own process over the years, that experience.
I'm impressed by a few things in your story, besides being impressed by the whole story, because it's a common one in theme.
Right.
Is one of the first things you said about when you started to feel anger was, and I wrote it down, you said, no, no, no anger. Mm-hmm. Because that's not a good Course student. And that reflection, you know, that I heard so much.
Right.
But that's not a good Course student. And so it's almost like that original judgment is still running through your life, that you are a fantastic Course student. You're working with the material. You're struggling with the material. I mean, Ken was the one who said to someone who said they loved the Course and they were having fun, and Ken said, well, then you're not doing the Course.
Right.
Does not mean we have to suffer doing it. It just means it brings everything up. And it seems to me, and this is from our conversation before we started to record, so forgive me for jumping to that.
Sure.
That there is I'd love for you to speak about what you are going through right now, but that there is a theme in it around the anger and the killing of the ego, because there is a narrative that you enjoy, that's your ego enjoys, that's very Lord of the Rings. And there is an attachment almost to that narrative of it needs to be this dramatic, and this is how it is till the end, till you get it. And so that is the story that you are connected with. And can you change that story? Because you're entertained by it.
So that makes 100% sense. I also wrote about that, basically comparing my journey and probably some course student's journey to the hero's journey in all the movies, but it also goes toward, in the Obstacles to Peace, for example, you have the final obstacle is the fear of God. You know, eventually we'll have to get to it. And I think it comes in stages. We go into the cave and we come back out. We go into the cave and come back out over the years. And some times are more intense than others. And yes, I think you're right. That story is definitely something I identify with. Mm-hmm. And I also know that the story, identification is salvation. The identification with this or with whatever it is, I believe will save me from love, which for the ego is annihilation. So yeah, I'm not sure that I'm willing to change the story yet. There's a reason why. And as we're speaking, I'm kind of putting it together. There's a reason why I have this story. Mm-hmm. And because I still think the protection I need to protect myself from his love, which is absolutely ridiculous. It's completely insane. But
not to the ego.
Not to the ego, obviously. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So looking at the story with Jesus, and bringing that to him, basically bringing that identification with the ego to him, for me, that's what seems like is my path. I think that's it.
I mean, it's a good a path as any and as good a story as any. But I would love for you to, just for a moment, if you don't mind, talk about what, after 25 years of this study, you are experiencing now.
Okay. So basically, I think what I can say is that I'm experiencing both sides more. And there's this line that I can't verbatim get it back to you, but it basically says, if you have at last, when you have at last looked at the ego's foundation, you have also looked at ours, Jesus says. So that's what I think is happening, or has come to over the last couple of years, to the ego becomes more intense, but also the moments with Jesus are much clearer and somewhat reminiscent to that first. None of them have gone to the state I experienced back then, but I have a lot of moments where I feel the love of Jesus and for other people and all that, but then I go back to the ego and experience the ego more intensely. And there doesn't seem to be a middle ground. There was, for a long time, a relatively neutral state for me. That was, you know, not a lot of ups, not a lot of downs in a way. But that has now, over the last 4 or 5 years, kind of moved away. That neutral in the car is no longer there. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to, if I'm in the ego, I can feel it. I can feel fear. I feel mostly fear. And when I'm in with Jesus, I know I'm in the right mind. But there is not a lot of neutrality anymore.
Yeah. The contrasts seem more vivid.
Right.
Yes. Right. Which definitely makes sense in a hero's journey.
Right.
You know, that good and evil become so delineated. And I mean, you were talking about it in a way, and this could be my misperception of it, but that this is causing you suffering, some suffering right now. Is that true? Yeah. And my question is, you know, it just, there's a sense that there's an attachment to the suffering within the story. Do you still have your cheesy picture of Jesus?
I don't. I didn't bring it to the States. It was literally just not possible.
I don't know. We all have different attachments. I have a picture of Jesus that makes me laugh because it was given to me and called Sexy Jesus. Really handsome, sexy Jesus.
Right.
And it always made me laugh that that's how it was delivered to me. But I'm just going back to this sense that, and it's just an intuitive sense, that there is such an attachment to story, but there's not, I haven't heard a lot of speak about choice, that this is happening to you.
No. I mean, I'm very fully aware that this is, I'm choosing it. Mm-hmm. But what the conclusion I came to is the following. There must, for me, I don't know if this is for anybody else, but okay. When you listen to Ken, it comes through again for me that this, the choice, yes, we have a choice, but we have buried that choice very deep in the subconscious mind under layers of guilt, fear, the belief in sin, the attack on God. We have basically covered that choice over. So for me, when you get to a point where you go get closer or deeper into the ego thought system, I can't, at that very moment when I'm in it, I can't decide against it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way at all.
But
I can say, I have a choice. I can choose Jesus now, and I have had enough experiences to know that when I'm with him, I can try, you know, there's no question of his love. But within the ego thought system, that choice is there. And Jesus tells us, you know, you have a choice. Choose once again. I mean, it's very clear. The whole course is about the choice. But we also have to realize that I think we have thrown that choice away, and we have covered it with many, many layers of things. And we have to, the choice is, for me, not so much to decide for Jesus at that very moment, but the choice is to look at the ego that keeps me from deciding for Jesus.
Mm-hmm. It still feels a little judgmental rather than really, really starting to attach to the witness of it, because it's in the witness that there's not the suffering.
Yes, I understand that, but you can't get to the witness. When you're in the cave and you're looking at the ego's foundation,
mm-hmm.
you can't get to the witness. I mean, I can get out, you know, obviously I can get out once in a while. But I think the choice at that very moment, of course it's there, but if I wanted to get out and if I wouldn't be afraid to go back to Jesus, I would do it.
Yeah.
So the judgment comes from fear of the love that is there.
The only thing that I know to do, and I, this is not unfamiliar to me, what you're saying, you know. So the only thing that I know to do in those moments is to ask for help.
Yeah.
And, exactly. And to know that if I am deep in that, that I trust as much, you know, as you're saying, it's part of the journey and it's a kind of hopefully burning off of that, you know, going through it to get to the next step and not holding back from it, not being that in that place of judgment that this is bad. But this is part of the path.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I can 100% see it as part of the.
Yeah. It's just hard. Yeah. There are times where it really feels hard.
And so, Stefan, you're saying like the gravity and the weight of the ego just feels like it completely suffocates out the choice for you when you're in that moment. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it wasn't always like that. You know, I had years of quote unquote light choices where I, you know, I could go to Jesus and he would be there. And now that I have kind of the last 5 years really focused on just more looking at the ego, the easy choice is no longer there.
Looking at
it'll come back, but this is I feel like this is definitely the, you know, the fifth stage or whatever you want to call it, the dark night of the soul, where the blackness of the ego becomes so real, because, you know, part of me obviously wants to hold on to the ego. That's the whole reason why we made the world. It's we were so identified with the ego. And for me to loosen that identification is to really look at it and ask Jesus for help each time I'm in it. And I know eventually it'll end, but it is right now that, for me, that choice, even though it's theoretically there, I can't make it. It's almost like I say, I want to fly, but I can't lift off the ground. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And whatever I say, whatever I think, it's just not happening.
You know, Stefan, you've been in this practice for 25 years and you're still seemingly quite committed to it. And I would say I have tremendous compassion for what you're going through, and congratulations. You know, thank it's you. Part of your path, and it's just getting more fire in it. And it's not fun. It's really hard. You don't sound like, you know, you're going crazy, which is nice to know.
No, yeah.
That's that. but it does sound like you're in it, and it, as you know, it will pass. But when you have a grasp so strongly on it, this is what happens. And, you know, it isn't fun.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sorry for that part of it, but I trust your path so completely that I say congratulations, because you're sticking with it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you know, the thing is, Tam, I had this, whenever I was in the past, whenever it was getting too intense, I could actually say, Jesus, this is it. This is enough.
Yeah,
I can't take anymore. And it was fine. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I went back out and I lived and it was fine. I was quote unquote happy, you know, went on with my life, whatever. And I know, I think a year ago or so, I made a decision to not do that anymore. To not go back out and say, you know what, I have had enough. I wanna go back to the beach and lie in the sun and watch the waves. I'm just going to stick with it now because it just prolongs the whatever it is I have to go through anyway. So that was I remember that day when I made that choice, and since then I have not said it. You know, I've not said, Jesus, this is enough. This is too much. I want to go back out. I get days where I'm 100% no fee, nothing. I'm just fine. But I go right back in the next day. I'm like, okay, I'm going below deck again.
You've chosen to stick your feet in the fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not step out. And that's very, very brave. And, you know, I look forward to a time when we speak where it burns away everything that you no longer need.
I will look forward to that as well.
Burn away the fog.
Yeah. The fog.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Stefan, we'd like to talk about at this point in the interview, when you get caught in an ego storm, as you just mentioned.
Wait.
Yeah. I mean,
I have no idea. Matt.
Well, you're in a massive one now. This is like a marathon hurricane, sounds like. But like, is there anything you do that helps you get recentered, and so you any kind of practice you do that makes you feel a little bit better at all? It sounds like no. After what we just talked about,
my words is, I hope I'm not going to die. That's basically my mantra sometimes.
And yet you are, and yet you're going right.
Yes, I know. So I can say that, you know, this is when you get, we go, our journey is very individualized. Obviously, we all have our own ways of going through it. And for me, what I think is very valuable is in times when we feel, when I feel better, I now go more to Jesus than before, because that is the preparation for when it gets dark. Part of me knows I can trust him, even though I push him away and I say, I'm very afraid right now. And that fear includes you. And I try to make it very personal to him. And I kind of tell him, I'm in this state, I'm in this fear because I'm afraid of your love. And that jolts me out a little bit because it makes it so ridiculous. It makes it so, I just start thinking about it and, you know, what does it mean to be afraid of Jesus's love that I have experienced so fully? It makes no sense. So it, for me, that's the way of loosening my investment in the ego and in that fear a bit. That would be my crack, you know, that would be my little technique to make it very, very personal and say to Jesus that I'm afraid of you. And that makes it kind of gets me out a little bit, and then I go right back in. But that's the one thing that usually helps a little bit.
And you said you're afraid. Your mantra is like, I hope I don't die. Do you have like physical body symptoms where you feel like shortness of breath or like electric?
Yes, I have
shocks?
Anxiety. I have anxiety. My chest muscles are tight when I'm in that state. When I'm not in that state right now, I feel sore, as if I was doing like crazy physical work. Mm-hmm. My whole, you know, my chest is, my muscles tighten, and I feel sore the next day. But it's all, it's I have physical symptoms.
Yeah.
Physical expressions of it.
I mean, on the good side, you know what it's like to kill Jesus and watch him come back to life and die.
Did your sword glow like in the Lord of the Rings, like the how it glows?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't blue. No, it did not. There were no orcs. Okay. No.
Well, thank you for your incredible honesty about that. This, I mean, that's pretty brave as well. No sugar coating, and here it is. Right. And Oh, so Matt, yeah, sugar coating.
Yeah, Stefan, give us your favorite comfort food.
My God. So what I make now that is very comforting, especially in the winter when it's kind of cold out, it's pork chops with sauerkraut. And the sauerkraut, you saute the pork chops with onions, and then you put the sauerkraut right into the big pot of the pork chops, and then you let it simmer for like an hour or two. And then I make mashed potatoes. And that combo is very, very comforting. And you can eat it the next day, and it's even better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's my
comfort food. Sounds very hearty for a winter in Hudson Valley, New York.
Absolutely. You're totally right.
And there's no sugar coating.
Yeah. No, there's no sugar coating.
How about, is there any German pastries or sweets that you miss at all?
So I mean, the German pastries are so good. It is, I have kind of cut them out of my awareness because it's,
you repressed it.
Nothing really comes close. So
yeah,
I also stopped sugar in the last couple of months. So
totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
Well, there must be a cosmic balance because I think I'm eating more sugar, Stefan.
Yeah, no, I have also for a while, and it got to a point where it was just too much. I said I have to cut it out.
Yeah,
you have your own path, Matt. Yeah. We're not comparing.
Yeah, I can send you some Nutella. Nutella is really the most addicting substance on earth.
There's so many good things in Germany. The pretzels and
the pretzels.
Just like there's the sausage and there's just it's. I mean, I could go on. I'm naming comfort foods for you. So okay.
Oh my God, yeah. Go for it. We have a German restaurant like 2 miles from us.
And is it good?
It's very, very good.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, you get like it's so good. Spätzle, you get the Spätzle and. German short rib with red cabbage.
Yeah.
It's really, yeah. So I might have to go there.
Right now.
But dinner.
Yeah, when you're in your darkest place, maybe that's the place to go.
I know. You're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
And get another cheesy picture of Jesus.
Yeah.
I have the one from the foundation, which I really like.
Okay.
That's a really nice one. Yeah.
Well, Stefan, thanks so much for coming on Miracle Voices and sharing your miracle voice. We really appreciate it. I know you're an author. Do you want to share how people can find your material or anything like that?
Yeah, so it's basically all on Amazon. I self-published everything on Amazon. I did some sci-fi first and some fantasy, some post-apocalyptic and all this doomsday stuff. You know, you can imagine now why.
What a surprise! And,
but there's always a good ending.
Of course, the hero's journey.
Right. And then I wrote this book, My Life Without Jesus, and out is in parentheses. That is kind of an autobiographical journey with the Course, and then 2 others that are The Healing of Fear, A Journey Through A Course in Miracles, and they're all on Amazon, so you can go there.
Okay. Well, thanks again, Stefan. I hope you make it out of winter there. I know it can be a little dreary at times, but what a great place to be. We really appreciate you coming on, and thanks so much.
I repeat that metaphorically.
You what?
I repeat what Matt just said metaphorically. You're in winter. We look forward to you.
Yes. To the spring. That's right. Groundhog.
I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening today. Please subscribe to Miracle Voices by hitting the subscribe button on your podcast app. If you are enjoying these conversations, please consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever podcast app you use. And lastly, please visit us at miraclevoices.org and join our newsletter so we can stay connected. Until the next podcast, I want to leave you with my favorite Course quote, "When you want only love, you will see nothing else."